It's Success Happens on 930 WFMD, a discussion with leaders who share their pathways to success. Success Happens with your host, Jen Charlton.
Good morning and welcome to Success Happens. This is Jennifer Charlton, and it is my pleasure to have each and every one of you here listening with us today. You know, I always love doing these shows because I have had the opportunity to interview such interesting people, and we're about causing success, right? And it's causing success in business, in life, whatnot. But what better place to have success be caused than right in our school systems, where our future leaders are going to come from? Thanks to the initiative by Governor Hogan that we will be starting school after Labor Day in the public schools, that gave all our students and families an extended summer. And I understand that it had a nice impact also on the tourism trade here in Maryland. So that's been great. But here we are. It's back to school. I love learning. In fact, I drive my husband crazy. We go to the museums or whatnot, and I have to read every single plaque in its entirety. And he says, honey, just skim it. We got the info. Let's go. You know, so I love learning about things. And I think when I was younger, there were a few classes that maybe didn't quite get through the noodle. And one of those was history. The other was science. Did not love taking apart a frog. So I have had to find my way. And of course, my thing is communications, and I love it. And I love how we communicate it and the psychology behind communicating and all of that. So today we're going to have a great discussion. And I thought, what a great opportunity to have Gary Brennan, former president of the Frederick County Teachers Association, otherwise known as FCTA, here as our guest. So welcome, Gary.
Thank you for having me.
And we're going to have a conversation about what it takes to be a great teacher and explore that conversation. And I've had the pleasure of having Dr. Alban, superintendent of schools, on the air. And we've had an interview with Brad Young, the president of the Board of Education, which was a fantastic conversation. So we've looked at it from a couple different perspectives in terms of the teaching arena, mm-hmm. but we've not had a working teacher such as yourself, and certainly not somebody from the union. So I think it will provide some insight to our listeners because, by the way, and you know this, some people are pro-union and some people aren't. Mm-hmm. So I want to look at what is the influences that union has, the impacts, good and bad, so we can start to educate people really about the purpose of the union and maybe, frankly, and educate you. If a caller wants to call in, you're welcome to call and have a conversation with us. 301-694-WFMD. That's 301-694-9363. So you're welcome to call and ask any questions or make a comment. How can we work together?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not doing that well right now, working together, the working together thing. And so I think, and I don't mean that just in the school system, I just think that we've become a society that is very anti, mm-hmm. as opposed to integrated. So I'm interested in becoming integrated because I think when we work together, we become more successful.
Absolutely.
And I want to cause success. So that's sort of my preamble for you. So welcome, Gary. It's great to have you here. And you were the president of Frederick County Teachers Association from 2005 for 12 years?
10 years.
Okay, so 2005, 15. So let's start there. What was that experience like for you going from being a teacher to now being the leadership for teachers?
Well, I think it's the difference is when you're in the classroom, that classroom is your world. And so you're very caught up into that, what's going on in there with those kids, what your day-to-day successes, failures, frustrations, all of that is. And then you go to a job where you're kind of a mile high in a way, looking down mm-hmm. On the system from a whole different perspective. So I think that was the biggest difference for me, looking at it globally as compared to looking at my classroom, my students, my kids, which is what I'm doing again now. Those are two really different things. I learned a lot.
Let's compare and contrast. So when you're in that mile-high view, mm-hmm. having been a teacher, knowing the frustrations sure. or the circumstances that they're dealing with, how do you affect change?
I think you have to advocate at a level. What are the common things the teachers are looking for? When I was president, probably still now, the issues were things like time. Teachers wanted time, not because they didn't want to do the things they were being asked to do, but they wanted time so they could do them well. If they're getting training, they wanted time to talk to each other rather than have a training, have the newest thing rolled out, and then be told, get it done. The teachers needed time that they could talk to their team, talk to their department, talk to even, you know, there are small schools. I'm at Brunswick now. There, when I first started at Brunswick a couple years ago, I was the only one teaching the things I was teaching. So there are times I would like to be able to talk to somebody from another school who's teaching those things. So
that you could share best practices.
Right.
That, and I think, you know, today society, that's been become a certainly in business, mm-hmm. A common theme.
Right.
Well, let's share best practices.
Right.
But do we really?
Right. And teaching can be really insular.
It sounds
in that
good,
way.
But are you really?
Right. And so you have a lot of informal conversations with your peers, but it's hard to find that time for more structured time to do that. And that's where things, you know, in any business, I think it's true when people have time to really work through it. And that was something that is, you know, in teaching is different than a lot of jobs because you have to be, you know, in a certain place at a certain time with kids for this amount of time. And how do you carve time when you're not with kids that you can be talking to other adults about best practices, about the students even that you have? What's working? I'm struggling with this student. What are you doing that
or
works?
Or this type
what
of
am I
scenario.
Missing? Right.
Right. So, well, and I think the other aspect for me would be creating unity among teachers. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's dangerous.
Yeah.
Let me say the danger, Will Robbins, is that unification sometimes breeds uniformity.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe in uniformity.
Right.
I am very not uniform.
Well, I think that was a big autonomy. I mean, people
want.
You've
got to have your own thinking.
Right.
And then bring that to the table.
Right.
And discuss with civility.
Exactly. I mean, I've been in this long enough to know there's no silver bullet in teaching. There's no, if we all do this, if we all have Chromebooks, every kid is now going to succeed. It does have to, teachers do need autonomy. They do need to work what works for them, things that they can be genuine doing, not just following a program. You know, if you think back to your own teaching, I don't think you remember the teachers who followed what was in some book best.
No.
It was the teacher who was most passionate about what they were doing and why they were doing it and could explain that to you.
Mrs. Green.
Right.
I remember to this day.
I still remember my 8th grade social studies
and
teacher.
And it wasn't
that's
because she said, open to page 32.
Right, exactly.
Right. Well, you know, so back to this idea of, I really like this idea of unity versus uniformity. And I think, you know, today, and we're going to talk about this because I think it's really something I'm passionate about now that I do appreciate history as an older mm-hmm. person and the import of it, because we have to learn. I've had enough history to have learned from my own that, you know, we have to learn from history. You can't rewrite it. You don't get to rewrite it.
Right.
And I think there's some rewriting going on.
Well, I feel most history teachers, it's not so much rewriting as expanding. You know, I think the traditional way of teaching was very, you know, the great man theory. And so we overemphasized certain individuals at the expense of looking at things from different perspectives. I don't think it's we can pretend things didn't happen or we don't want to look at it from a variety of levels. But we want to make sure we're not looking at things just in this kind of one linear sort of way, that we're looking at different facets of it, letting kids decide ultimately, you know, what do they think? How do they process different sources and different ideas?
Well, I think there's, again, this idea of appreciating one's diverse cultural mm-hmm. backgrounds, okay?
Right.
Now, I'm not a Black American, okay? But I can appreciate that if somebody were a Black American, they would have a particular cultural view, mm-hmm. societal view, worldview. I'm a Swedish American. I have a particular cultural view and societal view and worldview given by I'm half European. My mother was born in Sweden. So I have that connection
mm-hmm.
to Scandinavia. Now, I think it's important to maintain those connections
sure.
without – how do I want to say this? This is tough. Without going to a point of degradation of another.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think what's happening today in these cultural struggles that we're having, and listen, some of this is deeply embedded in the school system. There are people, right or wrong, who believe that teaching history, changing the way we teach history, may be working toward a political agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to, if that's not true, we need to dispel that myth.
Yeah, I don't think that's largely true.
But I'm telling
true.
You, it is sure. a thinking out there. So we need to come together on what is a way to honor each and every
mm-hmm.
in society and the cultural nuances.
Well, number one, it has to be rooted in fact. I mean, that's
right.
particularly when you're
not
teaching
emotion.
High school kids. There's certain standards that you have to, every kid needs to know. They have to understand, you know, the American Revolution, why we became an independent country, the Declaration, the Constitution, all of that very fundamental stuff. And then they have to look at the facts, good, bad, and in the middle. I mean, not everything in American history is rosy and wonderful.
No, we have some ugly, spots
absolutely.
On our.
And
on
we have to look at that, you know, truthfully
yes.
and honestly. And then ultimately kids, you know, particularly when they get to the more recent history, they're going to have to be able to kind of come up with, okay, how does this affect my view of things? You know, that ultimately has to be the student's decision. And that's influenced by a lot of things. History is always going to be colored by what you teach. You can't teach everything, you know, so you have to every teacher has to pick and choose. Teaching the curriculum. We have a curriculum. You have to teach that. But then what you emphasize,
but when that,
how
let me,
you...
Yeah, not only interject there, but when that curriculum gets mucked with, which I think is some of the perception,
mm-hmm.
then it becomes, is that forwarding a particular ideology as opposed to teaching history in its fullest
mm-hmm.
form?
Right.
You know? And I think that's a very subjective view. I don't think you can do that objectively.
Right.
You know, you're going to be interpreting
sure.
at some point. So I think – and I love this discussion because I think we're – there's a difference to be made. Because if you and I can agree that – and we come from different political
sure.
you know, perspectives. But we agree – more than we disagree.
Right.
And this is what I keep saying to some of my Democrat friends. You know, I'm a Republican. People know that, you know, whatever. But I don't subscribe to a checklist.
Right.
I live by my convictions. And I think that, as do, I believe, many of my Democrat friends. But somewhere in the middle, when we're teaching school, and we're
mm-hmm.
teaching history, and we're teaching frankly, how society is going to be 20 years from now when they graduate.
Right.
Because they're our future.
Right.
Then we have to come up with a way, Gary, that allows for us to agree.
Right.
And that has been, I think, a real – this whole thing around the curriculum and what is appropriate, not appropriate.
Right. And I think people have to realize history teaching, it isn't completely stagnant. It does – change. Certainly, for example, in my AP U.S. history, we have to talk at the beginning about historiography and how we look at things. And Christopher Columbus is a great example to tell the kids it's not just, you know, the view of Columbus has changed so much and how we teach Columbus has swung all over the place. What is his role? Is it perfect? No. How did he, in the end up becoming kind of the symbol of all the negative things that came after him? Is that fair, that Columbus has to wear at times the mantle of all the negative things that happened after Europeans started coming to this country?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to you have to teach that, you know, when I was in school, we didn't question that. But now we need to kind of look at it in a broader way.
We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Gary Brennan, who's the former president of the FCTA. We're going to be right back after this quick break. You're listening to Success Happens on Free Talk 930 WFMD.
When you run a business, a lot of things can get in the way of what it is you set out to do. Replacing the couch in the lobby, finding a great deal on coffee creamers, managing all your office printing. Whoa, hold on. We can help you there. Whether you need a new multifunction printer, supplies, or some simple advice on lowering your printing costs, your local Xerox authorized sales agent can help. And we're located right in your backyard.
Visit Xerox Complete Document Solutions online at cdsxrx.com or give them a call at 301-825-9220.
Sweeties on the Creek is scooping now. More than 30 flavors, including top sellers from award-winning Giffords Ice Cream. We also have sorbets, frozen yogurts, creamy shakes, and sundaes. Just added our specialized gift collections, including gourmet chocolates, nuts, and yummy sweet treats. Fabulous fashion finds for the gals, and Disney products for kids young and old. Stop in here for your dessert after your next dinner in town. That's Sweeties on the Creek, just up from Market Street.
As heard on the WFMD South Mountain Creamery Morning News Express.
Former Walkersville resident, now living in Houston, John Lindsay gives us an update on what it's like living with Harvey and the aftermath.
Everybody is dragging everything in their home, carpets, wood floors, furniture, to the curb for trash. Everybody's in the same mode. It's just an amazing amount of destruction. I can't put it into words.
Bob Miller, mornings from 5 to 9 on 930 WFMD.
This is Jennifer Charlton with Success Happens. If you are out of the area and you'd like to listen live online, go to WFMD.com to hear our show Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. on Free Talk 930 WFMD. Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jennifer Charlton, and I have with me today Gary Brennan, who's a former president of the Frederick County Teachers Association, a wonderful U.S. history teacher at, in which school are
Brunswick
you looking?
Brunswick High
School. So shout out to Brunswick. But
go Roaders.
I was going to ask you, are teachers competitive, you know, between teachers for your school?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'm a Roader all the way now. Don't mess with that.
That's great. So, you know, we've been talking about what I think is a really meaningful conversation and dialogue that needs to be had about how we teach,
mm-hmm.
right? And what we teach and who gets to say.
Right.
And clearly the Teachers Association has a big influence. Why don't you share with people the mandate, the purpose, what you serve to do at the Teachers Association on behalf of teachers and hopefully the parents that of the kids are serving, right?
Absolutely. I think the mission of the Teachers Association is kind of at least twofold. One is to represent the professional educators in this county, to advocate for their professional needs, for their contract needs, et cetera, to make sure that the system is treating them fairly, following the rules, just as we have to follow rules as teachers. The second part of the Teachers Association is really being an advocate for public education. I think it's really important. Teachers, who cares more about public education than the people that are working in a day-to-day and the parents and the families that are using the service? So being an advocate for public education, I think, is just as important, whether that's funding laws that help teachers teach, don't get in the way of teachers teaching. So advocacy is a huge part of what we do.
Well, and I would think safety today would also mm-hmm. be right up there. You know, there are some, you know, conversations about certainly kids in some of the inner cities, Baltimore, whatnot, D.C. I know these big cities have had real issues around concerns for the safety of teachers. Mm-hmm. They've been, you know, accosted. I knew one woman who'd been attacked. You know, it gets ugly.
Well, I think all of us, teachers, community members, students, the very first job of a school system is a safe learning environment.
Right.
And we're all on the same page with that it has to be safe, but it still has to be welcoming. How do you balance those two things? How do you make it easy for parents to come to the school, for community members that are there to help? You don't want it to be like a fortress that's difficult for people to come to or is not inviting, but at the same time, you have to protect the students and the people that are in the building working. So that's always a balance the school system has to deal with.
Yeah, so when you look at the idea of the advocacy piece and setting up curriculum, how do you, as a body, influence the curriculum being taught?
Well,
because some of this is being driven down
sure.
by state.
I would say curriculum is not an area the union is on the total forefront of. It's one of the things we do not negotiate, cannot negotiate in the school system is the curriculum. Teachers' involvement at the curriculum is really not so much at the union level. That's more at the teachers in the building being in workshops, curriculum workshops, just doing their professional job of helping mold the curriculum more so than the union advocating
well,
for
deliver,
this or that.
Deliver the curriculum that they're given.
And influence what that curriculum is. I mean, teachers help write the curriculum because they are the experts. They help figure out the sequencing, the timing, trying to create maps so people have time to get through the curriculum, et cetera. So teachers play a huge role in that, but not necessarily through the union, but more through just their professional work day to day with the school system.
Well, and I'm just thinking of the now the board where Brad Young is chair. How does that integrate with the Teachers Association?
In terms of curriculum, ultimately the board approves all curriculum. And our biggest direct interaction with the board is through negotiations of our contract. The Teachers Association is the exclusive bargaining agent for all professional staff, teaching staff in the county. And the board is in charge of negotiating the contract with us. They have the final say on the contract from the management side. Beyond that, we work with the Board of Education on things like we have an insurance council to make sure that our insurance is good and meeting its obligations but being cost effective and able to sustain itself. So there's lots of ways that we interact with the Board of Education.
So when you look at – that brings me to a thought, a couple of questions here. But with regard to the compensation, I know there's been a lot of discussion around fair compensation for teachers in our county versus Montgomery County, for example. Of course, we have a much lower cost of living up here, thank goodness. The taxes we are hoping to maintain lower so that people can afford to live here and work here. So some of that is a balance, right?
Sure.
If you raise your taxes to fund above maintenance of effort, which we'll talk about in a minute, then that filters down into higher costs, you know, right? So this idea of teachers being given wonderful selling point for teachers, I think, is 9 months. You know, you've got that summer off. I'm sure there's things they do during the summer. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's activities that they're required to do. But that's a kind of a Benny for teachers, which I think is wonderful. And you're saying the insurance program is pretty good and things like that. So would you say that teachers in Frederick County have a pretty good now, we're talking about Frederick County. Of course, this show goes all the way to Howard, and it goes to, you know, Southern PA. So, there are a lot of listeners, right?
Yeah.
So, but if you could speak to maybe how that affects in general,
I think,
the comp plan for teachers.
Teaching to me is a middle class job, and that's what it is. It's a good middle class job. So teachers go into it knowing that is the financial expectation they should have. They're not going to be the wealthiest people in their community, neither should they be the most struggling people in their community. And I think, that we've pretty much hit that sweet spot. But we're also in a market, a competitive market for teaching. If we were out in the middle of South Dakota or somewhere like that, we wouldn't be in the same market. So we have to also recognize market forces work for teaching staff as they do for anyone else. Whether we like it or not, we compete with Howard and Montgomery and Fairfax for educators. Does that mean tomorrow we're going to have the same salaries as Montgomery County? No, it doesn't mean that.
So they have to be attracted here for other reasons. What are the other selling points for being a teacher in Frederick County?
Well, one is the standard, the quality of life. I think teachers come here partly because they want their kids to go to school in Frederick County. That's a big selling point. Some people come back here because they have roots here.
Because of the quality of the education in Frederick County.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
yeah, definitely. Yeah. My kids went through Frederick County Public Schools, and we had a great experience as parents. My wife's a teacher as well, and we would never have wanted our kids to go to another school system. We love this school system as parents, not just as employees. Both of our kids were very successful and got a lot out of Frederick County Public Schools.
Well, I think that Frederick County has a wonderful reputation, and thanks for your leadership. We're going to take a quick break for news and weather. You're listening to Success Happens. I'd like to thank my sponsors, Xerox Complete Document Solutions and Sweeties on the Creek. We're scooping now, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jennifer Charlton. And I wanted to just kind of reframe to our conversation today with Gary Brennan, who's the former president of FCTA, Frederick County Teachers Association, and he's a U.S. history and you teach psychology?
I did at TJ High. I was the AP psychology.
Okay, AP psychology. But he has his master's in psychology. We were kind of joking off the air. You know, today teaching has become and learning has become so much about the psychology of how do you get it in. But also, I think, how do you work with a variety of personalities that you probably are faced with in a student body? And so I thought it would be interesting to talk a little bit about how you do that, just briefly. When you're looking at your class and you sit and you assess, how do you approach? Is each class unique?
Oh, yeah. Every class has its own personality, I'll put it that way.
I would think so.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So then does that frame how you approach teaching that class?
I think one of the most important things a teacher has to do is establish relationships with their students, a positive relationship with the class in general, with individual students, know what kind of help students need. I always start the year with kind of some questions about kids, what they liked when they had history before, what they don't like, what's helped them, what doesn't help them. And what's interesting with that is you get lots of different answers. Some kids are like, oh, I love group work. Other kids are like, my God, we have to work individually. I can't stand being in group work. Some kids love to engage in conversations. Other kids, please don't call on me. You know, I really freak out when I speak publicly. So you have to get to know your kids as individuals and then your class, kind of how does that all gel together?
So how do you find that at the beginning of the year they may hate history and at the end of the year they love it? And there's something that happened in the middle.
That is my hope.
Yes, right.
Of course, that is my hope.
But they might have a block against history.
Oh, absolutely. One of the questions I always ask them is, compared to other subjects in school, history is A, my favorite subject, B, kind of take it or leave it, C, my least favorite, D, I'm only here because I have to be here, kind of a question.
Right.
And it's all over the place.
Yeah.
Now, you were speaking earlier, you said, I really learned to appreciate history when I got older.
Mm-hmm.
I run into former students all the time who tell me, you know, I liked your class, it was fun, but now I'm just like a history junkie. Yeah. And sometimes I think, oh, it'd be great to teach adults history because they're so much more open to it. Because kids, you know, their most important thing to them is what's going on in their life day to day. And sometimes it's hard. Now, I think, in a lot of ways, finding connections to what I'm teaching about the past, how does it connect to the present? That's a way to bring kids in, but that's where you sometimes—
it's not relevant. I think when you're a kid, it's just not relevant. When I went back to Frederick Community College, shout out to them, love. I went and finished my lower-level classes that I had to do. I had to take U.S. history.
Uh-huh.
And I loved the teacher. I don't remember his name. He was great. But, you know, I learned about government at a whole new kind of view, because here I was learning it out of a textbook. I knew about government. I voted. But it just was a nice new way of relearning.
Right.
You know, there's a school of thought, because I've been a trainer down in Washington. And as trainers, we trained in transformational technology. But, you know, when you want to master something, it's believed that you can't just read it once.
Right.
You actually have to read it three times.
Right. And sometimes you have to get it through different modes.
I mean,
reading for some kids is never the way they're going to get it. And I think one of the biggest traps for a teacher, and I'm sure particularly when I started teaching I fell into this, is thinking because you love history and you loved history. I've always been a history nerd. Even as a kid, I loved it.
Yeah.
That, you know, there's kind of this expectation, if I just present it, they're going to love it because I loved it. You have to accept where kids are.
Right,
try to find ways to connect. So sometimes I don't think I want every kid to love history. It's I want them to appreciate it more than they did. You know, so the kids that love it, I want them to love it more. The kids that liked it, I want them to maybe love. But there's some kids, it's just I want them to not dread it, or I just want them to appreciate at some level that there is a reason to learn it, and it will somehow apply to them. So you can't – I've seen teachers get really frustrated when, how can these kids not appreciate? I showed them this thing that I just thought was amazing, and they just sat there with blank. You have to accept where they are and go from there.
Well, and I think you don't, and I say this even about adults all the time, you really don't know what people are dealing with.
Right.
You don't know what that child is faced with in their personal life that is preventing them from hearing a word you're saying.
Yeah.
So I think back to the psychology of it, you really have to get in their world a bit. And I was a troubled kid. I mean, we had, you know, family issues and all that stuff. And I had teachers who got in my world.
Right, right.
And they're the ones I remember.
Sure.
Because they knew I was struggling.
Right.
And, you know, but for the grace of God, there go I. So, you know, it all turned out. But it was a touch and go.
Right.
So I think you have to really get in their world. I want to shift for a second to something that I'm passionate about. And that is this idea of the politics of teaching. And I'm going to share it with the listeners. You know, you and I met the first time when I was running for county council at large. Mm-hmm. And I was invited in to sit in front of your team, and you were the president, to pitch me as a candidate and why you should endorse me.
Right.
And of course, you guys did not endorse me. And that happens, you know, I remember one of they were great questions. Mm-hmm. They actually were very useful for me.
Absolutely.
To do that thinking. But, you know, the idea of maintenance of effort and funding schooling. And I'm a big believer. And of course, I come from a business background, and my husband and I have a number of businesses. So, we look at investment ROI, you know, what are we getting for our money? And every budget line gets analyzed, you know, how much are we spending if it's Sweeties, how much are we spending on ice cream? Could we reduce our costs? How would we reduce our costs? Are we scooping the right, you know, where's our waste, right? So we're looking at that stuff. And we've grown, you know, I'll just share this. We're on track to grow the business 20% this year. Okay. So it works to do that. Now, my question to you was, when I was the candidate, and I'll ask it again, is maintenance of effort. Yeah, but let us see the budget lines. How are you expending that money dollar for dollar? Where are there opportunities to streamline our costs, reduce our costs, maybe use technology to reinvent some of our practices? Right. And I think some of the belief was that the thought that teachers, I don't want to say it this way, but to be an extreme example, could become obsolete because of technology. No,
right.
We need to reinvent the learning process, which we talked about earlier, so that we're utilizing resources that can reduce our costs and improve our effectiveness.
But it's funny you say that, because what's really funny, that the school system has undergone a lot of reviews, how we do things. I don't think there's a lot of fat in the budget. We have people come in, oh, we're going to find millions and millions of dollars. And they're there for 4 years, and they come out saying, wow, there really wasn't. I thought it was just like waste everywhere, and it turned out there's not millions and millions of dollars of savings in people wasting money on pencils or whatever it was that they were thinking we were doing. So, and at the same time, people say, oh, you guys really got to do things differently. Whenever you try to do something differently, people say, that's not how we did it when I was a kid. We still have a big fight.
Yeah, people hate
penmanship.
Change. They hate change.
You know, there is a huge fight to this day about we're not teaching cursive writing enough, or we're not teaching any subject the way we did when I was a kid. People need to go into our schools and see how we've changed, why we changed. Kids do not learn. I started teaching in 1986. They don't learn the same way. We didn't have kids connected to technology in 1986 the way we do now.
It's a totally different environment. Totally different. And I want to give a shout out to you guys for the added technology at the school systems, even in those lower levels, because the kids are they're getting technology. Look, my son started, I think he was a year and a half, 2 years old, on my phone.
Right. Oh, I see.
By the time he was four, he knew my phone better than I did.
Right.
So which is embarrassing to admit, but the truth. So we can't not give them that access, because they're going to get it. So let's make sure we're controlling how they learn it in an appropriate fashion. So I really think that the added technology, you guys.
And we can't get angry at kids
because. You added about $4 million, I think, in technology.
We can't get angry at kids because they spend all their time out of school gaining information and accessing information through their phones, really, their phones. Yeah. They don't even use computers anymore.
Right.
And then they go into school, and we expect them to learn exactly the way we did when our biggest technology was the phone in my mom's kitchen.
Yeah, you know, we can't. 32.
Yeah, we can't expect that. And for teachers, you know, there are now younger teachers who are digital natives just like the kids. And there's a lot of interplay that goes on there because they grew up through
the technology. Finally crossed that divide.
Maybe. I'm still an immigrant. So, you know, it's kind of my second language or third language, not my first.
That's great. Well, I think that, you know, the idea that we're here to empower the kids for a future they can't imagine.
Right.
They can't imagine.
And we can't.
And we can't imagine.
Right.
But even their life as their future,
right,
that they can't imagine what it's going to be.
Well, that's why it's so important that we're teaching kids how to critically analyze the information. They're bombarded with information, a lot of it inappropriate, a lot of it one-sided, a lot of it just reinforcing views they already have instead of giving them a chance to. And so it's not, you know, there was a time when we expected kids to memorize every state capital and how to spell it. That is irrelevant to these kids who carry, you know, the Library of Congress around in their pockets every day. What we really need to be teaching kids is how do you analyze this information that you're getting? How do you tell what's reliable and what's unreliable?
Well, and I think that brings us to, you know, the idea of media today and the responsibility that media mm-hmm. has to provide unbiased information. Mm-hmm. And we can have our political views and ideologies, but if you're if you're putting things out there in an irresponsible way, you know, what happened to this idea of integrity
right.
around communication? You know, plagiarism when I was a kid was a big
right.
deal, right?
Right.
What happened to the opposite of plagiarism, or, you know, kin maybe to it, is this idea of misinformation.
Right. Absolutely.
It is so out of integrity to say things that are not true.
That you know aren't true.
That you know aren't true. To be nasty, ugly, mm-hmm. or divisive, or to bring a society down, ultimately, because
right.
that's what we're dealing with. And so I think, you know, there are, and it's on both sides.
Oh, absolutely.
It's on both sides. You know, I say often, people live in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
People don't live on the far light,
but unfortunately,
right or left.
I think they're being pushed.
Well,
to those,
I'm not being
degree.
Pushed.
Right. No, but a lot
and by
of people.
The way, that annoys some people because they want me to be pushed.
Right. They want
and I'm not
going to
be pushed.
Sure.
Ask my husband. So you know, we as a society, most people live in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have to be sensitive to the informing of kids in a responsible fashion, giving them correct and right information and the tools to analyze it.
And I think a part of that is, you know, look, even when a kid looks at a document from the Spanish-American War is a good example. There was a ton of bias then. There was the yellow press. They were trying to drive people to come to opinions that agreed with the owner of that newspaper. So it's more about teaching the kids the context, right? What was the context? What was the purpose? Why did?
In other words, the conditions of the environment of the day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very
and what
good.
Was the goal right. of Hearst in trying to get that war going? What was in it for him? What was he trying to do, et cetera? And so, you know, a lot of it is, you know, it's not like bias is new to our age. So when you're teaching history, you can't assume that because it's a document from that time, there's no bias in it. There was the bias that went on then. So a lot of it is about context. A lot of it is about, okay, if you're looking at Indian removal in the Jackson era, you need to look at documents from the Indian perspective. They have to see that, not from what we say about the Indian, but from the native people themselves.
Now let me broaden this conversation just a minute, and then we're going to go on a quick break, and we'll come back. I'm going to leave this kind of as a setup. Is there are teachers who have expressed to me concern that because they are more conservative,
mm-hmm.
they cannot voice. In other words, they can't be public. And this is true in Montgomery County because I interviewed a teacher from Montgomery County. And you don't tell anybody you're conservative in Montgomery County. and believe me, I grew up in Bethesda. I have friends from high school. They still don't tell anybody. So this idea that one cannot speak one's opinion without being chastised or harmed in some way professionally is a real concern for me. So I want us to talk about that when we come back. Okay, you're listening to Success Happens. This is Jennifer Charlton. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Xerox Complete Document Solutions and Sweeties on the Creek. We're scooping now, and we'll be right back.
When you run a business, a lot of things can get in the way of what it is you set out to do. Replacing the couch in the lobby, finding a great deal on coffee creamers, managing all your office printing. Whoa, hold on. We can help you there. Whether you need a new multifunction printer, supplies, or some simple advice on lowering your printing cost, your local Xerox authorized sales agent can help. And we're located right in your backyard.
Visit Xerox Complete Document Solutions online at cdsxrx.com or give them a call at 301-825-9220.
Sweeties on the Creek is scooping now. More than 30 flavors, including top sellers from award-winning Giffords Ice Cream. We also have sorbets, frozen yogurts, creamy shakes, and sundaes. Just added our specialized gift collections, including gourmet chocolates, nuts, and yummy sweet treats. Fabulous fashion finds for the gals, and Disney products for kids young and old. Stop in here for your dessert after your next dinner in town. At Sweeties on the Creek, just up from Market Street.
It's all about your car. Call in with questions to Dave Serio beginning in less than 30 minutes right here on 930 WFMD.
Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jennifer Charlton. I have with me today Gary Brennan, excuse me, who is the former president of the FCTA. And he's a history teacher and he's a psychology guy. And we've been talking about, you know, how do we in the school system that you could say is a microcosm of society.
Absolutely.
Right? That we don't all walk and chew gum the same way. And please, I hope we never do. Because in that homogenous kind of format, there is no room for new thinking. And I'm a big believer of thinking outside a box.
And I'll tell you, I think one of the greatest strengths of public education is that it's a more heterogeneous environment. It is the one place that everyone in the community can go to. And so it isn't all like-minded. And it's not economically, kids are not the same, racially, politically. It's this great mix of people. And it is like the real world. And that's one of the things I love most about public education, is that it really brings – that's where the whole community gets together.
Well, and in bringing kids together from all walks of life to love and appreciate each other regardless of their walk of life, you know. And so I – you know, one of the concerns that I expressed before the break, and I've seen it and I know it happens because I've been told it happens by people from within the systems, that there it tends to lean more liberal, and that if you are a conservative, and I think there was a number of about, I recall from a couple of years ago, don't quote me on this, but I think it was around 30% of the teaching body was conservative, okay, in Frederick County, which would be not consistent, frankly, probably with the population of Frederick County.
I used to work with the NEA, and about a third of NEA members across the country. This is a national.
Okay, so that's a consistent number.
It's fairly consistent.
Yeah. But so it tends to lean a little more liberal as a body. But I know that there are conservatives who are afraid to speak their voice and to speak their principles and to bring forth their contribution, frankly, as a matter of freedom of speech, to the issues of the day that may face that body, because they'll be ostracized for being a conservative.
Right.
And I know this happens in Montgomery County because I interviewed anonymously a teacher who has been ostracized. And frankly, this goes back to the incident around Rockville, which we don't have time for today. But, you know, that whole situation, let me just say it again. There is no way a 19-year-old should be in a school system with a 16-year-old. I don't care what the federal law is. It needs to be changed. It's an inappropriate learning environment for that 19-year-old and for that 16-year-old. So they need to get him out or her out into a, you know, a community college environment where they can be around their peers and can learn at the level they need to. So there I said it. But anyway, back to this idea that we got to allow for all our voices to be heard, right, as teachers as well.
Well, I think, you know, I 100% agree with you. People need to remember, when you're an employee of any organization, you don't have complete freedom of speech within your job or about your job.
That's true
for teaching, yeah, as it is for any.
Yeah.
But outside of your work and in Frederick County, contractually, teachers have the right to their political involvement, their political beliefs, their freedom of speech outside of the school system. You know, today I'm here talking as an individual. I don't represent the union anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm a teacher. I'm not speaking for the school system. And people have that right. And I think people who know me know I have very clear views politically, but I always, when I was the president of the union, encouraged anyone to voice their opinion, to be involved. There was no litmus test for people to be involved at any level of the union. Of course, we're going to debate. What in the end, we got to come to a conclusion of what we're going to do and how we're going to act. And so people
you model that for your kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want them to have the thinking that we were talking about earlier,
right,
where they have that critical thinking, then you must, as a body, represent that as well and bring all views to the table.
Right, right. Right. It's not my job in the classroom or as the head of the union. It's not my job to tell people what to think.
Right.
It was my job to hear from people. Ultimately, particularly in the sense of the union, we had to come to a decision. And the decision of the people most involved, part of that is the union probably a little more left than the body in general? Yeah, because they were the ones who got involved. I mean, that's part of it, too.
Or
they believe in the union model.
And listen, perhaps. I say that to everybody listening. Anyone listening to me, you could be involved, mm-hmm, and have an influence,
right,
if you choose. And you got to apply.
Yep.
You know, you got to get out there and vote. I mean, run for an
right
office
and
hope for the votes.
To lose on those fights sometimes.
You know, sometimes you lose. I lost, you know.
But you don't pick up your ball and go home.
No,
you know, stay engaged.
That's, right. You know. So we have a couple minutes left, and I can't leave the conversation without asking your opinion about the controversy around, as a U.S. history teacher, around the statues in the,
mm-hmm,
squares.
Right.
Because to me, trying again to erase a nasty blemish,
mm-hmm,
you know, that's not who we are today. It's who we once were. And it's, you know, and I have friends, many friends from many, many cultural backgrounds. I mean, mm-hmm, you know, and we talk about it. It doesn't change my love for them that some statue stands there about somebody who was a slave owner back hundreds of years ago. You know, that doesn't impact.
I think there's a big difference between a statue to a slave. I would never in a million years say we should be removing statues of the founding fathers because they owned slaves at a time there was slavery in America.
Well, get ready because they're trying.
Well, I would. I don't know. I think that's a bit of a red herring. I don't think that is where people are headed. I think what people are concerned about is statues to people in the Civil War era who were fighting against our country, put up at a time well after the Civil War without any input from the whole community. Did the African-American citizens, taxpayers, have any input in that statue of Stonewall Jackson that went up in front of their school or their courthouse or whatever? They did not. They didn't have any say because it was a time they were denied any say.
Well, and I get that. And then perhaps it should be taken to vote and let the people vote on it as a society, as opposed to decisions being made by a small sect of people.
Sure.
You know, maybe that would solve that problem and allow the voices to be heard through the voting process.
Or perhaps there's a more, yeah, it's a complicated.
It's complicated. We're not going to solve it today, but I appreciate your thoughts about that because I believe you cannot rewrite history. You must learn from it
every
day. And
again, I don't think moving a statue rewrites history. History is not just about statues. It's
about a lot more. But it represents changing things to try and accommodate. And I think that there is this belief that history should somehow not look the way it looks.
Sure, but
we're done. And we're going to have you back. And this has been Success Happens with Jen Charlton. Listen next Saturday morning, 9 a.m. Have a great week.